Good evening.
Blog Talk Radio.
Why can't I ever get my intro right? Yes, John, I see you on the board, and I'm just going to make a brief intro. Our topic has shifted three times tonight. I got a breaking news story from a Beverly Hills confidant named R.H., and I'm not going to give out her name. She is... She has some Hollywood connections, probably more than most, but she is a Beverly Hills resident originally, I believe. Anyways, we were both companions and friends through our membership with Larry Elder because we both like listening to his show. So we got to talking at some point, and then we finally met at the Ronald Reagan President's place up in Simi Valley, and we met Larry Elder live there. I think it might have been the second or third time she met him. It was the first time I met him. I ended up going to Larry Elder's funeral, dad's funeral, Randy Elder, and I brought flowers and shook his hand and gave him a hug. Larry and I corresponded for 40 to 45 days in January and February of 2011. I also called into his show several times. Probably from like 2009 to 2012. We are not on the same political spectrum, but I listened to him a lot. I found him to be entertaining. A lot of the stuff he said didn't insult me, except for when he went over the top. But John and I found a news-breaking story tonight that we're only going to spend 10 minutes on, and then we're going to move into our other topic about Abraham Lincoln's proclamation. Needless to say, John softened my approach on the subject. The woman that Larry Elder is engaged to is Alexandra Datig. She's formerly known as Tiffany and was part of the Heidi Fleiss scandal that rocked the world about 10 years ago when Charlie Sheen was busted up. Anyways, she was one of the hookers in that group, and she slept with Jack Nicholson, John Ritter, and a few others that we know of. And she co-authored a book about something about you're never going to sleep with anybody again in this town. And there were three to four co-authors in that book, and she ended up suing the publishing company because she said there was some misinformation, and she sued them for $8 million. John, I'm going to reel you in about 5 minutes, okay, John? Not 5 minutes, 2 minutes. I just want to give you two more facts. She got her degree at the University of Phoenix, which is the cheesiest route to get a degree. And I found this horrible YouTube. I'm not trying to criticize the woman, okay? But she made a 6-minute video on being sober after 14 years. And instead of just telling her story, she has her drunk self in the bed and her sober self is talking to her drunk self. Now, how she got to be Larry Elder's assistant on a radio show is beyond me, because even with my Cal State Northridge master's degree, I don't think I would have got placed there. But she's done some public service work for a council on marijuana safetiness with the state of California, and she has cleaned up her life. So as John says, I will give her the benefit of the doubt. But I'm going to reel John and Bob in 30 seconds. I'm just going to play a clip from her sobriety video.
What you could do with that and the things that you could be learning other than, being in bars, hanging around with people that are like you who don't think they have a problem. So anyway, I just, I'm just checking in with you. I was just worried and just want to give you a call and let you know, hey, I'm right here. I'm sober 14 years. It's really cool. But I wish, I wish I hadn't wasted so much time, and I don't want you to waste your time, because I really love you, and I want you to be somebody. Man, really? You got a degree? You went back to school? School sucks. I can't believe you went back to school. Yeah, that's a pretty nice office you got there, too.
Okay, so the second part where that girl's mocking her means that she's picking on the sober one, the drunk one. I'm going to bring John and Bob in. Hello, John.
Oh, greetings, Janessa, and how is my frozen hammer today?
I'm fine. I want to say hello to Bob. Hello, Bob.
Hello.
We went from Abraham Lincoln to a Heidi Fleiss hooker in 30 seconds, so let's bring Bob up to speed. Bob, I got a tip from a Beverly Hills colleague that Larry Elder, a famous Los Angeles talk show host, whose main mantra in life is screaming about victocrats and blood-sucking poor people on the government, and he hates victocrats, people who claim that they're helpless, is now engaged to an ex-call girl named Alexandra Daytig, who claims that she was a victim of sexual trafficking, and I don't know how far back it goes, but she was supposedly, based on her YouTube video, she was a former alcoholic too, but basically, we were only going to spend 5 minutes on this topic, but it is, I did get the breaking news from a Beverly Hills woman who confronted her on Facebook shortly after she posted a fiancé picture of Larry Elder and and herself. Her name's Alexandra Daytig, and she's formerly known as Tiffany, the Beverly Hills hooker in the Heidi Fleiss scandal. So the only reason I'm bringing this up to speed is, A, it's breaking news, and B, it goes against the grain of Larry Elder's mantra that he hates victocrats. And now this seasoned hooker is claiming she's a victim of sexual trafficking, and both me and my Beverly Hills friend think that's rather convenient. John, why don't you go first?
Well, I would say in America, one of the wonderful things I love about our country is we're innocent till proven guilty. As far as I know, it's okay for couples, adults, consenting adults, to marry or start relationships. So I would say, kind of like most things Hollywood, I'll give you an example. There's always talk of people like Will Smith is gay, John Travolta's gay, everyone's gay. And I always say, were you in bed with them? Like, are you there with the camera actually seeing who's with
them? Well, she actually co-wrote a book about her Hollywood exploits and people she slept with.
Right. In fact, they asked Charlie Sheen at one time, they said, why did you pay so much money for sex? To which he replied, I wasn't paying money for the sex. I was paying all that money for them to keep their mouths shut. But in this case, it was kind of keep their mouth open and shut, I guess, at the same time. So I would say the doubt, let's say this person cleaned up their life and they wanted to start all over again, and they would probably want to meet a powerful, respectable person and be a part of that program. I don't know if that's the case, but
I'm glad she cleaned her life up. I'm glad she's been sober 14 years. But on the other hand, Larry Elder and I were friends right when Bob and I were living in the same building, and he wrote me back 40 days in a row. I went to his father's funeral. And even with my master's from Cal State Northridge, I don't know if I would have been able to wiggle my way in onto his broadcasting station. This chick has a degree. She has a rubber stamp degree from the University of Phoenix, and I don't know what the hell she did to be his right-hand man, but it just seems fishy to me.
Well, she's probably, a pretty hot girl, and so forth, attractive, and probably has used some of her sexual power. I kind of look at it this way. If Mary Magdalene, if we pulled out her rap sheet, it probably wouldn't be so good, but I would still say the question is this a case of love scorned where Larry perhaps didn't follow up with you and instead he kind of went a different route? I'm stirring up controversy.
I'm not jealous, John. I wouldn't marry a libertarian. The fact of the matter is it's just disturbing that Larry Elder, who's very... he's whittled down 5% of the American population as salvageable. Now, let's just say I was a famous talk show host like Ann Coulter, and I picked a gigolo, a real-life gigolo for my spouse. Wouldn't I get some heat for it?
I think you would get a lot of heat for that. That's kind of the nature of the public. I have a feeling Bob probably would want to hit the eject button and parachute out, but Does he have
Bob,
any
Bob, we're only spending 5 minutes on this topic.
Yeah, well, give me 30 seconds, okay? First,
why,
I'm glad...
Why
to,
are you...
I don't need more than that.
Okay, go ahead, Bob.
I'm,
we wanted to
I'm
let you in.
I'm glad she's changed her life. This is not front page news. This isn't radio or TV or magazine news. It's information that doesn't need to be public. What is going on is I think that she's trying to use it to make money, and that's all there is to it. It's not about trying to make her story public to help other people. That's all a big lie. If she's saying that, you know, all this is an attempt to make money, you know, and I think it's not worthy of our attention.
I only have one last comment on this topic. Bob hit the nail on the head without knowing anything about the story, because she co-wrote a book with Robin and Liza Greer called You'll Never Make Love in This Town Again. And shortly after it was published, she sued the publishing company for $8 million because they said that she got some of the facts wrong, and she was a co-author. So it would be like me or Bob writing a book and then someone publishing it, and then we'd sue the publishing company. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, so what you're saying is her little red dress was really green, I guess.
Okay, well, I'm just going to read one last quote that my friend R.H. confronted her on Facebook, and this is what she wrote back. My friend said, don't be fooled. Okay, basically, my friend told her that she knew who she was. Her real name, her stage name was Tiffany, and she was a hooker. So she just asked her, you know, she just basically said that you're a hooker, let's admit it. And then Alexandra wrote back, any label that is designed to haunt a survivor of traumatic events with the past is cruel. This includes call girl or ex-call girl. By the way, I cannot believe that I have to have this conversation on this thread that shares a photo of me and my fiancé, a.k.a. Larry Elder, on a day that took me 3 months to create for him. I'm not sure what that means, if it took her 3 months to create a proper photo or a proper announcement of their engagement. I'm not sure what that means. But Bob says it's not worthy of our attention. So, John, why don't you introduce the next topic?
Oh, I shall. Just a little follow-up to that, though. I think to a degree, in a way, it's discussable to the degree that we're humans, and we have flaws, and everyone has to deal with that. And I think, I believe I heard one time that most of the money in the world is actually owned by women and not men. But it's not because they so much earned it by their own business, but rather they married rich men who died. And, of course, they ended up with, you know, the money. And then there's always that estate issue. So it's kind of interesting. Women have certain flaws, but one of the male flaws tends to be of sexual nature, and you know, that's kind of the good and the bad and the ugly of it all. So I think that's kind of the nature of this. You'll see great men of power, and you know, like JFK or Martin Luther King or whoever, and you'll find out if you dig into their bed or their past, there may be some creatures there that, you know, would not want to make front page headlines. But you know, the Bible talks so much about different stories with David and Solomon and different people with their relationship problems. In fact, even Adam and Eve was really just, you know, a relationship problem. Or same thing with their sons being unable.
Well, spiritually, whether Bob's irritated or not, Bob, I did know Larry Elder personally. I went to his father's funeral. We rode back and forth for 40 to 45 days. We talked in many different situations, and the fact of the matter is, if he's going to play the role as a radio host where 90% of society he considers leeches, I just wanted to address this on live radio because I have a friend who tipped me off, who I know personally, where Larry, myself, and this woman were all standing in the same room at least twice in our life. So that's why I wanted to confront it. Now, John's pet project tonight, I didn't realize that Abraham Lincoln gave the proclamation, Emancipation Proclamation, around Thanksgiving. Is that when he actually did it, John?
I believe so, but you know, one of the things I texted you is that I said, I bet Bob could actually recite it by memory. I was wondering, you know, if maybe he can give us a little historical background, because we didn't always have Thanksgiving Day as it was. Abraham Lincoln, who I believe was not part of the Illuminati or the Skull and Bones, but he was a very spiritual person, and in doing so, he gave a lot of things to our country that are so spiritual and God-based that you don't see in current leadership. And so maybe a little background regarding his proclamation would be, you know,
of course, the first Thanksgiving was, you know, in the Pilgrims, and they arrived at Plymouth Rock late 1620, survived that winter, you know, through the help of the Indians. And the following fall, I don't know if it's in November, October, or whenever, but the following fall was, they held a feast, the Pilgrims did, and invited the Indians, and that was the first Thanksgiving celebration. It was a Massachusetts holiday only for 100 years or so, but over time it grew, and other states in New England began having, you know, Thanksgiving as a state holiday. It was not a national holiday. And then when the Civil War came up, the Civil War was a traumatic experience. You know, it was just horrendous. You know, what they thought, what both the North and South thought would be over in a month or two, was rolling into years. And the deaths were in the hundreds of thousands. And it was just a traumatic experience. Abraham Lincoln's popularity nosedived. Every time there was a big battle, they listed the names of all the dead. You know, he barely won re-election in 1864. Wow. So in late 1863, Battle of Gettysburg was July 1863, and in the fall of 1863, he gave both the Gettysburg Address and the Thanksgiving Proclamation. They were both, the Gettysburg Address was not given, you know, like the day after the Battle of Gettysburg. It was given several months later, you know, in the fall of 1863. I don't know the exact date or anything, but it would have been about the same time when the Thanksgiving Proclamation was made. As John mentioned, the Emancipation Declaration was around that time, within a couple of months when all this happened.
I can look the dates up. Go ahead and continue.
And also, Abraham Lincoln himself had a deep spiritual awakening in the second half of 1863. He went from being a nominal Christian, a Christian in name only. He had a deep Christian religious experience and became a real Christian, but he was deeply affected in the second half. Somewhere, I don't know the date, but you know the Battle Hymn of the Republic was
yes.
When it was written, it was performed. Its first public performance was in the presence of Abraham Lincoln and a lot of other people in a big hall there. And was it Julia Ward Howe? Whoever wrote the Battle Hymn of the Republic, and you know, the music is very stirring also. And when they finished performing it, the lady who sang it, Lincoln was silent for a half a minute, and then he said, "Play it again," or "Sing it again," you know, because it was such a profoundly moving, you know, hymn, the Battle Hymn of the Republic. And the whole nation needed some kind of you know, the Civil War was just, just so traumatic, you know, and this whole idea of a day of Lincoln, and with his Thanksgiving proclamation, transformed Thanksgiving from a local New England holiday to a national holiday, where many states were, you know, were enacting. It didn't become, I don't know when it, when Congress actually got into the act, and I think that may have been under Frank Roosevelt in the 1930s when Congress got into the act and made one day for the whole country.
It says that Lincoln made a preliminary proclamation on September 22nd, 1862, but it was it wasn't official until January 1st, 1863, when he signed the order and issued the real McCoy, you know, the real proclamation.
Yeah,
so he made a preliminary
emancipation.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. You know, the
so John, what was your purpose for bringing this up to commemorate Thanksgiving?
It is, and also because a lot of people don't know the history of it. They always do the pilgrim
John?
Story. Oh, yeah, can you hear me? Hello?
I can hear you.
Yeah, I was going to say, most people
I'm gonna
know
have to call in. I lost the sound.
Cool.
Well, John, I can hear you.
I'll try a different line, maybe see if that comes through. What you maybe could relate to Jane is just that most people know the pilgrim story. They just don't really deal much in school with Lincoln's proclamation. I mean, I really didn't hear much about it. It was always the Indians and the pilgrims.
Right.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I lost the sound for about a minute. So I didn't hear what you said.
Could you hear both of us now?
Yes, I can. Can you repeat what your point was?
Right. I was just telling Bob that going to school, everyone's experience is different, but for myself, I always heard the pilgrim story and the Indians and that part of it. But as far as Abraham Lincoln's actual proclamation, really didn't get a lot of that in school. And it wasn't until recently, about 3 or 4 years ago, one of my cousins sent me the actual notice of it. And then I looked it up, and it was just a really profound. It's almost like maybe because it was touched with Lincoln's faith in Christianity and the Bible and God, that's not really emphasized that much. Whereas the pilgrim story, it's not so much dealing with Christianity. It's just kind of a thanks to God type of celebration. I don't know. That seems how it appears to me.
Well, but both. Lincoln's Thanksgiving proclamation, you know, in fall of 1863, and FDR's Thanksgiving proclamation, I think it was in his first year in office, you know, was because in both cases, the nation was undergoing a great traumatic event, you know, the Great Depression. Yeah. FDR got elected because we had hit the actual bottom of the Depression when he came in, and he was attempting to turn the nation around, you know, and asking Congress to declare a uniform day of Thanksgiving for the whole country, you know, was an attempt to affect the feelings, the hopes of all Americans. You know, it wasn't until later, I think it was 1940 or 41, he gave his Four Freedoms speech. But I remember the Norman Rockwell painting of Thanksgiving, which was, you know, showed a Thanksgiving dinner with the turkey and the family around it, and people's heads and hands, you know, in the pose for prayer. And the caption at the bottom about, you know, freedom from fear, freedom from hunger, freedom from, you know, Roosevelt's Four Freedoms is being connected to the idea of a national Thanksgiving.
Okay, well, you were right on all counts. Because of the ongoing civil war in Confederate states in America, refusal to recognize Lincoln's authority, a nationwide Thanksgiving date was not realized until Reconstruction was completed in the 1870s. On December 26, 1941, President Roosevelt signed a joint resolution of Congress changing the national Thanksgiving Day from the last Thursday in November to the fourth Thursday. 2 years earlier, Roosevelt used the presidential proclamation to achieve this change, reasoning that earlier celebration of the holiday would give the country an economic boost.
Well, the national holiday happened in 1933. What he did in 39 and 40 was just, you know, changing the date, you know, moving it back and forth a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, the Christmas shopping season.
I'm stepping out for 1 minute. I'll be right back. Just continue, please. Thank you.
Oh, by the way, Jay, before you do that, can you click me in on the other phone line? Maybe not.
We may not have Jane at this point.
That's okay. Well, one thing actually kind of as a follow-up to what I was stating, the other reason I brought it up, because Thanksgiving's coming, you know, very soon, was in school, I never ever heard the actual proclamation read off. And look, reading it now, I can see why. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I mean, it's kind of repetitive with some of the statements, and it's very much an acknowledgement to God. And what I love is the second paragraph. It says, "Now therefore, I, Abraham Lincoln, President of the United States, do hereby appoint and set apart the last Thursday in November next as a day which I desire to be observed by all my fellow citizens, wherever they may then be, as a day of thanksgiving and praise to Almighty God, the beneficent creator and ruler of the universe. And I do further recommend to my fellow citizens aforesaid that on that occasion they do reverently humble themselves in the dust and from thence offer up penitent and fervent prayers and supplications to the great disposer of events for return to the inestimable blessings of peace, union, and harmony throughout the land which it has pleased him to assign as a dwelling place for ourselves and for our posterity throughout all the generations." That is so powerful, and I can understand why they never said it in school or repeated it, because it's saying, you know, basically bow yourself before God Almighty and give thanks. And it's like the schools are saying, well, we can't really acknowledge this. It's kind of like, hey, Christmas is coming up. Oh, no, it's the winter celebration break, you know?
Right.
It's like, no, it's Christmas. It's Christ's Mass. It's the celebration of Jesus. Deal with it. You know, if you don't want to celebrate it, I will, for what it is, but don't water it down and try to name it something else. And that's what happens in these things with the church and state, is they just want to hide from the truth of what it really means.
Yeah, truthfully, it's both the atheists and the Jews who want to water down or eliminate Christmas, to be real blunt about it.
And that kind of follows, you know, even if you go with that logic too, how many people are really atheistic? Now, I know there's a growing movement towards that, and I understand that there's a hedonistic kind of thought of just like to go with pure evolution as Darwin originally proposed and to stay away from the idea that we're created beings by God. But, you know, basically over the last 100 years, you know, you're talking 1% of the population, 2 or 3%, and again, the Jewish population, 1 or 2, or, you know, percent. It's you're talking about less than 5% of the people. The tail is wagging the dog. Like, you're 95% of the people. Oh, go ahead.
I said atheist. I didn't mean the watered down atheism, the widespread, you know, doubts a lot of people have, or not doubts, but the widespread indifference that many people have. I didn't mean that. I meant the people who are actually the actual Christ haters. That's what I meant when I said atheist. I used the wrong phrase, perhaps.
Right, and so and so kind of to follow up with that, it's like basically out of in a room of 100 people, there's one or two people that really fit that category. Now I'm sure that number's changing, but just from the time that I've grown up till now, it's usually been one or two people in the whole audience that just, you know, I hate God, I don't believe in Him, and screw that. And they're the people that are changing all these laws that are affecting the, you know, even if it's 51%, but, you know, it's probably 60 to 75% of people will say, when you survey them, they'll still say, I believe in God, I go to church, God bless America. And what's interesting is with Thanksgiving and Christmas, with other things like that, you know, when the country is in crisis, we always get religious or spiritual. You know, after 9/11, people on TV were praying, you know, before big sporting events. They were, you know, mentioning God. They were praying for peace, and no one batted an eye. You know, and gradually that wore off over the following weeks as the nation recovered and the shock wore off. But it's always in crisis. Suddenly we run to God and become very religious.
Right.
Everyone was going back to church. The first couple months, you know, church attendance was very big, you know, and it's just a, I mean, I'm glad
Can
that people
I
turned to God.
Can I mention something?
Go for
you
it.
You know, back in the old days, things, the church was just as powerful as the state. Now, if you were talking about 9/11 when people started going back to church,
right?
A lot of Americans are no longer rooted in Christianity. Our generation is, but not people who are 30 and younger. So they may not turn to the church in a crisis. Now, on Wikipedia, it says prayers of thanks and special Thanksgiving ceremonies are common among many religions after harvest and other times. The Thanksgiving holiday history in North America is rooted in English traditions dating from the Protestant English Reformation. It also has aspects of the harvest festival. In the English tradition, days of Thanksgiving and special holidays became important during Henry VIII in reaction to a large number of religious holidays on the Catholic calendar. Before 1536, there were 95 church holidays plus 52 Sundays when people were required to attend church and forego work and sometimes pay for expensive celebrations. Then in 1536, after England became the Church of England, they reduced church holidays to 27. But Puritans wished to completely eliminate all church holidays. So you have to think back to 300 years ago where a lot of people were immersed into the church. A lot of people had different ideas, but some of the roots of Thanksgiving and harvest were, even before a president proclaimed it, it was still a celebration.
Yes.
John? John? Where's John?
Where is John?
John's call dropped. I don't know if his phone's dead. The only point I was trying to make, Bob, is that it seemed like he was complaining about how people don't take church seriously. Is that what you got? We only have 5 minutes left anyway.
Yeah,
so it seemed like
That's what I got, and I agree with him. You know,
go ahead. You know, the Canadians and the New England people who came here in the 1600s, they had their own celebrations. They didn't need the validation from a Franklin or Delano Roosevelt type to validate their types of traditions and thankfulness. But I think the reason why John wanted to make this an ongoing part of the show tonight is that he was trying to prelude the fact that we should all be thankful, right?
No, I'm not, I agree. A recognition of God, a statement of thankfulness, you know, of what we owe to God. You know, it's Thanksgiving is.
Well, I'm
going to
try.
Of,
you know what?
Prayer.
Instead of John calling us, let's call John and see what happened to him. I'm going to call his mobile, and then I can just put his voice up to the phone. So here we go. Let's try him. John Yoder, please. John Yoder, your call dropped, and now you're 1 inch away from my phone, and people can hear you again. Did you drop the call by mistake?
I can't hear him. And I don't hear
either. You're not dead right now. Can you make your final thoughts? Because Bob can barely hear you.
Oh, yeah. I was just saying something we discussed while you were away is that the reason that we don't hear much about Lincoln's proclamation is that you read it, and I read it with Bob over the line. It's very intensely thankful to God Almighty, and it emphasizes his power and, you know, before our Creator, the great designer of the planet and of the universe, and just basically acknowledge him. And that's something that in my era growing up, because the church is saved, they obviously couldn't tell us to read that because they didn't want to mention anything about a God or thanking him personally. And just how, just like Christmas and other things, celebrations, we don't celebrate Christmas in the schools. It's kind of winter break, or they call it other things. So the point is,
he got cut off again, Bob, so we'll do the conclusion. We get the general drift. What he's basically saying is that public education has watered down a lot of holidays. They don't call Easter break anymore. They call it spring break. They call Christmas break holiday break. But there's nothing we can really do about it because we're living in the end times. The only thing we can do is witness to people one-on-one about Christ and his resurrection. Would you like to, what are your final thoughts, Bob? Because the show's going to end in 5 minutes, so we can close it out early.
I think that Thanksgiving is a very important holiday. You know, because it's important. The reason it's an important holiday is because it's important for us to be thankful for all we have, to express our thanks to God who has given us these blessings. You know, God, he wants our thanks.
Well, I grew up in a country where really, the only type of suffering I've ever experienced is my own bad decisions. I have been in a homeless shelter before, 2 or 3 times, and it was mainly because I was in between moving between 2 different states and trying to get a career started with a young child. Maybe I wasn't the victim of all my bad decisions. Maybe God intended me to be poor for a while. But basically, since I was born on the cusp of the Vietnam War, and now I'm mid-century with 3 or 4 more wars behind me. I know there's people in America suffering who have lost young sons and daughters in war, but besides losing a child to a failed heart transplant, I haven't had any major amount of suffering. So, I guess that was like 10 years of suffering. John's back with us.
Yay.
John, I've already done my conclusion, so, and Bob's done part of his. Why don't you say why you're thankful? We have 4 minutes left of the show.
I'm thankful for Thanksgiving, for what but it really is a day of thanks to the Almighty Creator. And we should all, if we believe that, we should be bold and not let anyone take that away from us. And same thing with Christmas or any of these celebrations. It is Christmas. It's Christ Mass. You know, let's be thankful. Let's be bold. Let's tell people, whoever you meet, let's give thanks to God Almighty who's given us life and our blessings in this country. It's the freedom we have before, you know, secular atheists and heathens take it away from us and rob our country of these great blessings that we have. And so that's kind of what I wanted to reiterate, is let's get back to our roots and remember what Thanksgiving really is before, you know, the government and the schools take it away.
Well, for me, it's a peaceful holiday where you can just relax with family and be grateful we live in a bountiful country with plenty of food and not that many worries. Bob, final thoughts?
Yeah. I am thankful that we have a Thanksgiving. And I wish that it would be celebrated with its true intention and true meaning more than what it is today. That's all I have to say.
Okay, John, because of audio difficulty, we're probably going to end the show 2 minutes early. So just pray that the Vikings win football week. Ha, ha, ha. That's a shallow prayer. And thank you for both joining the show tonight. We're meeting up again Wednesday between 2:30 and 3:30 Pacific time. Thank you for joining us. Good night.
Good night.